thank you, and thank you very much for the invitation here and for the opportunity to speak here. Thanks especially to Karen, of course, who invited me to come. So this is about like a project that started off in already 2 years ago about these computability questions in quantum field theory and efficient algorithms to perform perturbative quantum field theory. And I want to mention that recently there was an update to the story together with Anna-Laura Sattelberger, Bernd Sturmfels, and Simon Schelen, where we extended the whole story to toric varieties and had some applications on statistical models and Bayesian statistics. So this is a more mathematical work here. And there's another more physical work that is in progress with Henrik Munch and Felix Delander. So Henrik is a student in Padua, and Felix is a student in at DESY in Hamburg. And Felix is actually on the postdoc market. So yeah. And there we are interested in like physical extensions again of the story. So to Feynman integrals or to quantum field theories in, on flat spacetime in Minkowski space. So I know this is a sort of a mixed audience or more stringy oriented audience. So I would like to give some motivation. And the motivation in this case is, of course, quantum field theory or computations in quantum field theory. And I take it sort of for granted, even though this is, I know that this is not necessarily the case, that quantum field theory is always given as a Lagrangian as input. So here's just the 5 to the 4 Lagrangian, but this is sort of the data with which we start. But if you actually want to make predictions from your quantum field theory on some actual physical phenomena, this is not where the story stops. So you also have to perform some calculations with this Lagrangian to actually get some theoretical predictions that you can use to compare with your experiments out of this. And I know that there's like a couple of cases where they are very nifty and tricky ways to actually do this. But for higher dimensional quantum field theories, the only way to actually get from this Lagrangian to like actual predictions is perturbation theory, or the only practical way known to date. And you all know how this is done. So you have some observables and you expand it in some small parameter, which I call H bar here. So this O is some observable. And you also know that you can write it down as this expansion. And there are some coefficients, AN, the coefficients that can also depend on some extra external data, which is relevant for your experiment, for your measurement, like some momenta and a scattering experiment and so on. And this parameter is assumed to be small. And then the big innovation or the big power tool of quantum field theory or perturbative quantum field theory is that we can write down these expansions in terms of sums over graphs. So we sum over all Feynman graphs, and for each Feynman graph, we get a single Feynman integral. We have to divide by the symmetry factor, which is just the automorphism group of the graph. And each graph is weighted with the number of loops. So h bar to the power of the number of loops of the graph. Here I'm just talking about these Feynman integrals in this. So here's an example of a representation of them in this traditional well-known loop momentum form. So there are also other ways to write these Feynman integrals, but this is a very traditional one in terms of integrals over loop momenta. Okay, so the question that I would like to ask is a bit theoretical, but it stems from a very practical question. So so if we have some observable and we want to sort of compare it with our experimental data, we need to know the low orders of these kind of expansions. So we want to know H0, A0, A1, A2. So A0 is just the classical case usually. And we want to compute this. So the practical question associated to it is just, what's the value of these numbers and how can we get these values? That's a very practical question, and it's very relevant for experiments. But I want to sort of frame this more as a more of a meta question, a more theoretical question that sort of sits quite obviously out of these questions. And this is the one of computability. So in this case, the associated abstract question is just, is there an algorithm to compute these numbers, an? And the other question is, of course, then also, how fast can this algorithm run? And what's the fastest algorithm that we can produce to compute these numbers? And so this is this computability question that I want to ask. It's more abstract than this concrete question, but I think I want to suggest it's still a sort of an interesting question because, there's the question then, the concrete question is then, if we would invest like all the computer power that we have available, so how far can we go in this kind of expansion? How accurate can we push our knowledge of such a higher dimensional quantum field theory if we really desperately would want to do it? So the first question, is there an algorithm in general? So the answer is, of course, yes. You just have to pick your favorite quantum field theory book. You can read in it. And if you have infinite time, you can just sit down and compute as many coefficients of this expansion as you want, at least in principle, you can just compute these numbers. So the next question is, what's the runtime of this algorithm? So for the runtime, there's like the first like very disappointing fact of these perturbative expansions kicking in. And that's the one that's the fact that there's no way to directly compute these numbers an here. The only way to do it is the only practical way like that works in general for general quantum field theories is to write these numbers as sums over graphs. And the issue for the computability is that there are quite many of these graphs for large loop order. So the number of graphs grows very rapidly. So this is kind of this is much worse here on this side than it looks from the beginning, because there are just so many graphs. But what this suggests, of course, is that the runtime to compute these numbers an just factorizes as a product of the number of graphs of a specific order times the time it takes to evaluate such a Feynman integral. The number of graphs can be estimated quite easily. So it's always some exponential, a alpha to the power of n, times a gamma function. This estimates sort of the number of Feynman graphs for large n. And these coefficients alpha and beta, they depend a bit on the specific theory, but that's the general shape of these number of graphs. So the other factor is the time it takes to evaluate one single Feynman diagram. And this is the timing that I'm going to talk about in this talk. So Fn is now the time it takes to evaluate a Feynman integral of order n. So it's still very annoying that we cannot do anything about this factor here, and this number of graphs is actually going to dominate the whole story eventually. So the number of graphs just growing much larger than the time it takes to evaluate this Feynman integral.
Okay. This is an average, so it doesn't vary about the time to compute. I guess
I have
a chain of puzzles, it's very easy to compute.
I'm going to talk, so this is going to be the topic of the rest of the talk, but of course it varies a lot from diagram to diagram, but I'm interested here in general bounds. Like, so of course, if you have a very simple one, but the assumption is always the worst case, the generic worst case. Sorry? It's some rational number, I don't know, maybe 3/4 something, and beta is, I think it's just 1/5 to the 4. But I don't know.
The balance of the verbs and probably something like the balance of the verbs and then something.
Yes, you can compute it via some tricks. I mean, it's not so hard to compute these coefficients.
There's no intuition like what alpha, what generic alpha, what generic beta, like by the verbs I have. I can't estimate
say so. But I mean, you can just compute it by evaluating the combinatorics. Yeah. All right, so just to sort of quickly talk about analytic evaluation of these Feynman integrals. So I already said that Fn now shall be the time it takes to evaluate like one of these integrals. And the analytical computation of these things is in generally a very tough problem. So, part of the reason why it's a tough problem is also that the question is a bit unclear. So it's even an ill-defined problem to compute some integral analytically, because the question is always what counts as an analytic answer of an integral. And what you can do, what would be a potential way out, is always to ask for some expression of like your quantum field theory observables in terms of some known function space. But unfortunately, there's no function space known that works for all these Feynman integrals and all these quantum field theories. So in total, this is like, it's very tough to phrase this runtime question like for analytic computations. So eventually I want to focus about numerical computations. And to make this a bit even more clear, I want to give an example. So here of this triangle Feynman diagram, very simple Feynman graph. So we have three external momenta, P1, P2, and P3. And the internal propagators shall be massless. And if you heard like quantum field theory, you know how to write down the Feynman integral for this graph. It's very simple. And the question is already, why does this not count? So that's an analytic object, this integral. So we can just compute it by plugging it into a computer. But what actually counts as an analytic answer is this thing here, where the d of z of z bar and so on has some meaning. I mean, I just can flash it here. You have to know what these kind of symbols mean, but the inherent difference between this right-hand side and this left-hand side here is that there's a fast algorithm on this side to evaluate this integral for all values of p1, p2, and p3. And on this left-hand side, there's only a very slow algorithm to compute it, because we can plug it into the computer and the computer will take more time to evaluate this up to a given accuracy. So we have the slow brute force side here, and this is the fast side. Yeah.
In terms of
so this is not really like made specific yet. So I'm going to make things more specific later, but I mean, it means that it's actually only dependent like on the logarithm of the accuracy. So it's so you can get exponentially high accuracy after a limited amount of steps with these kind of power series expansion, which is amazing. And here with sort of normal situations where you have four-dimensional integrals and you plug it naively into the computer, you only get like a power law convergence at most. And even like for Monte Carlo, you have always like a square root convergence of these integrals. So that's very bad, very slow in comparison.
So just to would you be saying that instead of saying that the graph has like a certain complexity, you're saying like methods are...
Yes. So I'm really talking about the method and not, so here the story is complicated and I'm acknowledging that. So you can write down different analytic expressions, but this arrow here to get from the graph to this analytic expression is complicated and there's not a lot of creative energy going into this translation of this kind of fast algorithm here. Once you have it, this fast algorithm, you are fine, but, I want to focus here on the slow side. So the aim of this project is just to sort of get an estimate of the general runtime, which is here on the slow side, and try to improve on it. So that's the whole project. Yes, that's the answer. But the story is that here you have a fast algorithm to evaluate the
expanding into is the dialogue that's the algorithm.
So there are fast algorithms to evaluate this dialogue.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, the point is just that this is an analytic expression and this is an analytic expression. So what's the difference? The difference is that here the algorithm is faster to evaluate things. There's like stuff known that you can find that is not known. So there's no known, there's like graphs in this series that you don't know any family that can describe the associated functions or numbers. So nothing is invented to actually tackle these kind of objects. I have an example later on. So the approach here is really just to start like with the diagram, which is easy. Then there can be some intermediate steps like this integral representations, but they should be like obtained without any creative energy. And then I want to sort of stop the time until I get to the final numerical answer. And I only want to analyze this computation and the runtime of it and try to improve on it in the completely general case, because I want to avoid like all these complicated issues associated to the analytic computation of things. So we start with the slow but general approach, and then the strategy is to improve on the slow but completely general approach using like some mathematical structures.
So even if you don't have
So I'm also only looking into like scalar Feynman integrals here. But that's another question on how to actually associate spin to it if you have like a non-scalar one, because then you can ask like the speed it takes to directly evaluate Feynman integral also with spin structure. That's possible. More questions? So this is what I call direct evaluation of these Feynman integrals. And I'm briefly going to explain how this works. So recall we have these observables that we are interested in, and then we want to expand them. And the expansion can be written in terms of these Feynman graphs. This is this one traditional representation of these Feynman graphs, which I had like now one example. The following trick, so that's like the so-called Schwinger trick or the Feynman parameters, it allows to take a bit of a more algebraic geometric perspective on these integrals. So there's an integral transformation that gives you these kind of integrals over the positive projective simplex. And the U and the F are two polynomials that can be obtained from the graph. And this form of these integrals is more accessible to be evaluated both analytically and numerically, actually, than the original loop momentum form. So we really want to work like in this shape here of these integrals, or in other like more algebraic forms. So the important thing here is that this is an algebraic integral, as the U and the F are two polynomials, and so we have a completely algebraic integral over projective spaces. This is a mathematically very nicely behaved object. Just to sort of illustrate this briefly, so we have this integral. The omega is the standard volume form over projective space, and the U and F polynomials, they are given by some combinatorial spiel that we can evaluate on the graph. For that to be like an honest projective integral, we need this U and F polynomial to be homogeneous in those homogeneous coordinates. And during the course of this talk, I will also always assume that this integral here exists. So in many cases, there are like infinities appearing for Feynman integrals. So I'm not going to talk about that. I'm assuming that the integral is inherently finite, which also happens a lot, but in many cases, it's also not finite.
Wait, omega G is just some number you get from the graph, or?
Sorry, which?
Omega G.
Yeah, omega G is also an invariant of the graph. It's so the D is the dimension, and you can even, yeah, if you know the homogeneity of U and F, you can compute omega G just to make the whole integral completely projectively invariant. Yeah, so it's just an invariant of the graph. It's not really important what it is.
Too forest.
Yeah, that's like a subgraph. So a forest is a subgraph that doesn't have any cycles, and a two forest is a subgraph that does not have any cycles, that has exactly two components on the graph.
Component means it's two separate connected graphs.
Yeah, two separate trees. That span all the vertices of the graph. But yeah, so the exact shape here is not so important for the talk. What I think is more interesting is to give you some intuition, like on these integrals. Namely, mathematically, this U and F polynomial, they exhibit like very complicated geometries. So you can think about a polynomial always to define you some specific geometry. And these geometries that are associated to the Feynman graphs, they are very complicated. But that makes them also very interesting, these geometries. So the complicated geometries also can be sort of interpreted as being the reason why these integrals are very hard to be evaluated. Because these complicated geometries are, for instance, the cause that there's like so manifold numbers popping up out of these integrals to try to evaluate them. Okay, this complication, it even has the consequence that direct numerical integration of these integrals is non-trivial. So the direct numerical evaluation is even obstructed. And the reason, the explicit reason for this is that the U and F polynomial, that they vanish on the boundary of the projective simplex. So this integral has sort of poles, very complicated poles on the boundary of the integration domain.
Is this an IR effort?
Yeah, it's just a pole. So, I mean, what do you mean with IR?
So it's like a boundary.
Oh, so it's for specific boundaries of the complex, or is it just the integral complex?
No, so this is just a pole in the integrand. So you can have poles in an integrand. It's integrable, but there's a pole on the integral. Integrand.
The interpretation.
The interpretation.
The person who asked the question originally does a lot of unitary stuff.
Ah. Yeah, there's an interpretation of this as UV pole. So you can order these kind of poles instead of UV poles and IR poles, but they are not causing like a real UV divergency because they are integrable. So so you can interpret these poles as UV or IR poles.
So for example, they would stop believing behavior in some operator product expansion in some close distance limit to the bus that you can define as an expansion.
No, it's really just a. I mean, it's just like a singularity of an integral. So I wouldn't say that. So the kinematics, they don't really enter the game here. So that's really like a singularity on the level of the of this projective simplex. So it's not about the kinematics yet.
So any chance that they are UV or IR? Yeah, it's about the kinematics. UV or IR?
Yeah. So. So you can interpret it this way because some of these integrals are also infinite, so they require renormalization.
Is the interval over Schwinger times, or is it over loop parameters?
It's over Schwinger parameters. Yeah.
So then, go infinity.
Yes, yeah, it can go into infinity at the boundary. So if you want to compute these integrals, then you run into these kind of singularities, and
so
some of them are.
Wait, sorry. If I plug this in on the computer, I get nothing.
No. This is finite, but it has a pole. I mean, you can write down. So, I mean, maybe you just give an example. I'm actually going to talk about. Yes, but. So think about this integral here, right? this is finite, even though there's a singularity on the boundary of the integration domain. Right. It's an integrable singularity, yes. And this integral, it features the same shape of singularities. And actually, in a quite complicated way, because this is only a one-dimensional integral, but this is a very high-dimensional integral with a very complicated pole structure. So here's the square root. There's actually only poles. So I'm briefly going to talk about these kind of singularities. So for instance, this is like an interesting integral here, which is finite, but it has a pole on the boundary of the integration domain. So there's nothing. So these singularities, they just appear on the level of the integrant. But you can actually, there's a framework in which you can sort of interpret these poles as sort of a UV singularity, because if there's like a non-renormalizable singularity of your diagram, so in some cases there are non-integrable singularities and they cause like divergences of the Feynman integral, you can subtract the singularity by subtracting the specific pole. And the associated singularity is a UV or an IR divergence. So the consequence for the numerical integration is that the singularities have to be blown up first. And a blow up is a fancy word for a local coordinate change that gets rid of the singularity. So in this case here, the local coordinate change blow up, if you want, is just to just to change coordinates locally, say that x equals y squared. And you can do the exercise and see if you do this kind of local coordinate change here, the pole disappears on the level of the integrand. So this is like a very simple toy model of a blow up. And in this Feynman integral case, you have to do this in like a vast generality, because here you are working higher dimensions. So there's like complicated poles structure, so more things like this one here that you need to take care of. So I actually have this now as an example. I want to explain briefly like why this is actually relevant for the numerical evaluation. That's a kind of a fun example, this 2 log 2 integral. So suppose you want to evaluate this 2 log 2 case, this integral over the square, and you are very lazy. So you all know probably how to evaluate such an integral. You just have to invent some variable transformation to be able to evaluate it. But suppose you just want to evaluate it via Monte Carlo. So I assume that you heard of Monte Carlo. So what you do in principle is just you look into the integration domain, which is a square. And then you just throw uniform points onto the square. And for each point that you throw, you evaluate the integrand. So in this case, it's like 1 over x plus y. So if you do this, you can then make this experiment and just take capital N many points, evaluate this integrand capital N many times. So capital Xn and Yn, they are now uniform random variables on the square. So they give like random coordinates on the square. And the idea is that the average of all these experiments is going to give you an approximation of the original integral. So you just interpret this integral here as an expectation value, so to say. So the surprising thing is, really surprising thing is that you get complete garbage if you try this out on your computer. Does anybody know the reason? Any idea? Why is this garbage? So the problem is the error term. So the scaling of such an experiment is going to scale like with the square root. So this is like the standard deviation is always the square root of the variance over the sample size of the population. This is the law of large numbers or the central limit theorem. And in this case, the variance is computed by squaring the integrand. And this integral, it turns out not to be square integrable. So it's not L2. So if we just estimate the variance, we just get infinity, because if we square the integrand, we can easily see that this is an infinite integral. So the error term is always going to be infinite for this kind of experiment. And no matter how many samples we take, we are always going to get garbage. So naive Monte Carlo in these kind of cases always fails if you have such integrable singularities. Because you cannot get this number by a naive Monte Carlo. You have to apply tricks. And the same tricks have to be applied in a kind of a more fancy fashion, even for Feynman integrals. So that means, like, even the brute force numerical evaluation of the Feynman integrals is a quite non-trivial problem. And so, yeah, I'm going to talk about, like, solutions to this problem. There's a traditional solution. So to talk about this, we generalize from the Feynman integral to, like, general algebraic integrals, where we just have two polynomials, p of x and q of x, and just talk about this general case. And the approaches to solve this, they are called sector decomposition, and they have been pioneered by Bino and Heinrich, and were later improved by Bogner and Weinzierl, who realized that this is actually like a very algebraic geometric problem that was already solved by Hironaka in 64. There's also like a very nice simple geometric interpretation of this problem that also already uses lots of convex geometry, and actually also, if you look into it from the right perspective, involves tropical geometry. The caveat with all these approaches is that they work completely here on this general side, and they leave out all the nice known structures here about the factorization behavior, for instance, of these integrals, so of all these UV and IR singularities that are known to exist. So they work in a completely generic case, and they lose all this nice structure that has been applied, like, for many interesting things in the analytic, for the analytic evaluation process. Freddy?
Yes, so you said it's a generalization, but if D is not even, then it's not a specialization, right? You don't get polynomials. If D is R, you get a square root or something.
You can also take this q here to some arbitrary power, so I'm just simplifying things a bit, but so in fact you can just take here families of polynomials raised to some power, and here also in the numerator the same, so that's the same story. I just didn't want to spoil, like, the expressions with too many indices and powers and so on. But yeah, you're right. So this is not really the generalization. You can also imagine, like, arbitrary exponents you're still attached to the thing. Okay. So I also want to mention, like, exactly this right-hand side with such extra exponents also appears in a work of Akani Hamati and Lam. And then you get sort of stringy integrals, so integrals that are important in string theory. So you can perform integrations over moduli spaces using these kind of integrals. This is also a generalized Mellin transform, which has been studied by a group of people around Passare. And it can also be interpreted in terms of toric geometry and toric varieties, which also leads to this follow-up work with Schumpeter, Steffenberger, and Tillen. So now is the time to actually talk a bit about the runtime of these numerical evaluations using this traditional approach for these blow-ups. So the runtime to evaluate, like, an integral like this up to delta accuracy via this approach, it scales like V, where V is the number of monomials in this integrand, V square actually. And the other factor is delta to the power of minus 2, which gives the scaling of a general Monte Carlo method. So this delta to the power of minus 2 just comes from the Monte Carlo evaluation. And so this V, so the number of monomials in this quotient, it grows approximately exponentially in the number of edges of the Feynman graph. So this is like a quite largely exponential runtime for this evaluation. So the new results are now that if you look into this closely, you can improve this. And the first important insight there, so that's the result of the paper from 2 years ago. The first important insight is that this numerical integration and forming these kind of blow-ups is actually an exercise in tropical geometry of the associated integrals. So that's the important tool. And you can view these kind of problems as like problems in tropical geometry. Through this lens of tropical geometry, this general oblivious approach, so that does not use any of the structure of the Feynman integrals, it can be accelerated quite a bit. So we can go from this V squared times 1 over delta squared scaling to a V squared plus V times 1 over delta squared scaling, where this improvement here, this decoupling, so we see if you are interested in very large accuracy, then we only effectively get a dependence on V, which is linear, not the square. This follows like from this interpretation of the whole thing as a sampling over certain polytopes. So the achievable accuracy using this approach, it decouples partially, at least, from the integral's complexity. And the third result is that for Euclidean Feynman integrals, we can use, so that's just an example, where we can use like lots of structure of the integral. And there, the integration can be accelerated quite extremely. So we can go from this unfavorable scaling, which is exponential, some kind of large exponential, times delta to the power of minus 2, to something which is still exponential in this prefactor, but then only polynomial in this part that depends on the accuracy. So we have some exponential runtime pre-processing step, and then just n to the power of 4 for each Monte Carlo evaluation. So that's much faster than the originally known evaluation of these kind of integrals in this case. So the theorem, so to say, is that there's a relatively fast algorithm to evaluate this Feynman integral. And to put this into perspective, so for these traditional solutions, 3 loops is already a pretty tough challenge. And 4 loops is usually impossible. But with the new approach, so I changed the summer actually because there are some improvements that have been implemented over time. With the new approach, 20 loops are easily possible. So that's like a huge order of magnitude that so many more integrals are possible to be integrated this way. And it's much faster. And the implementation is also quite simple. So this is just the basic implementation that has been used.
So you say possible, you say like a random graph?
Yes, so any graph that you want, yeah.
And this is all the masses,
no, you can put arbitrary many masses. It's independent of the number of kinematics, actually. Okay. The runtime only depends on the edges, actually. So I'm lying a bit here with the loops. So you have to fix, you have to go to about 40 edges. You can go about to about 40 edges.
And also the number of external, like, also doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's the kinematics, it's independent of the number of kinematics. It's kind of on there. Yeah, so that's interesting. But the reason is that for this is that the kinematics are just evaluated via a matrix product. And so if you put in like all possible kinematics or all possible masses, just means that more entries of such a matrix are non-zero. But the price of such matrix multiplications does not increase if you have like more non-zero entries or not. At least not at this size of like 40 times 40 matrices. The caveat is that only Euclidean momenta work so far. So in Minkowski spacetime, so Minkowski regimes, that's this work in progress. And this already also works quite well with Henrik Munch and Felix Tillander. Okay, so here's this example that I mentioned previously. And that is quite interesting. So it's a sort of another illustration, which is known to be a non-hyperlog, non-polylog, non-MZV thing. And it appears at 8 loops in phi to the 4 theory. So it's known to not evaluate to something like this. And you have to use algebraic geometry to prove this. So there are certain invariants associated to these polynomials. And they show you that the result is going to be something which is very modular. And it cannot be mixed state. Mixed state meaning that you get something that falls into the ballpark of these polylogs or these multiple zeta values. But with this algorithm, you can just plug it in and you get some number at the epsilon pole. So this is a log divergent graph. So you get always like a one of epsilon pole that does not depend on the kinematics. So here in the higher orders in epsilon, which you can also compute, you also would get kinematic dependence. It's not just a number, but here this is just this number associated to this graph. But this actually contributes also to observables like the beta function. So it's an interesting number that can be evaluated. And this is actually interesting because 8 loop is exactly at phi to the 4. It's exactly on the threshold. So it's also relevant if you want to continue computing the beta function at 8 loops in phi to the 4, which has phenomenological implications to things like the Ising model and so on. You need to know this number. And this is the only way to know this number at the moment, at this high loop order.
Does it work as well for integrals that have higher order poles in epsilon?
No, not so far. So I always assume that the initial integral is fine. I mean, in general, the method works, but not this implementation. So you have to do some tricks to actually work with integrals that have higher order poles, because these higher order poles, they come really from non-integrable singularities inside the integration domain. And you have to somehow deal with them because, yeah, you cannot integrate something which is infinite. So that's the same. So if there's a higher order pole here, then so this first pole, it just comes from this gamma function. So it's kind of trivial.
Oh, sorry.
But if you have a higher order pole inside, so the higher order poles, they come from divergences, so non-integrable singularities in the integration domain.
Yeah.
And there you have to...
They usually appear if you have infrared divergences, right?
Exactly, yeah. So there you have really like concrete divergences inside this, so non-integrable singularities, something like this here, for instance. And there you really have to do some tricks to prepare it again for this numerical integration. And this is possible to do these kind of tricks, but it's not in this initial work, and I also didn't work this out. But if anyone is interested in this, feel free to contact me. So this is like definitely on the to-do list of these kind of methods. And it's achievable very much, I would say. So to put this into perspective, how fast this goes, so you need 10 CPU seconds to evaluate this to per mil accuracy, but you already need 30 CPU days to get this number out to this 1 in a million accuracy. So this is just live. So this is a Monte Carlo approach, it's not so super fast. That's not so nice scaling in the accuracy. But the advantage is what to do, of course, here is not to use like your laptop for 30 days, but you put this on a computer with 120 cores and make this run for like a couple of hours, for 6 hours, and then you're done. So it's not too bad.
I'd like to understand a bit more about this sort of function. So non-hyper here means non-hyper geometry.
Hyperlog, so that's like a generalization of polylogs by Goncharov. Yeah.
In general, this is a finite function that admits some, in a sense, it is analytic on some domain.
Yes.
Right, so on some surface, probably.
Yeah. Right.
What about it? So like locally in a certain neighborhood, it will be expandable as a Taylor series, yes?
Yes.
And the coefficient should be something very visible, you know, but do you know like what it looks like? If it's an integral, it would be a polynomial. If you want one integral, something.
Maybe we can discuss this later because this is not really going a bit away from the theme of the talk, but yeah, so this is an interesting question. I already mentioned that we can compute higher orders in
epsilon.
So the result is that the minimal runtime is now bounded by this order of magnitude,
yeah.
And it depends on the number of edges. And surprisingly, it does not depend on the number of kinematics, really. But improvements are very likely because only like a very specific structure of the Feynman integrals is being used with this method.
So again, just about the previous number. So for this case, you put the kinematics in some Euclidean point, right? To get this number.
No, this is not independent of the kinematics.
Oh, the one graph done is independent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so now I'm briefly going to through, so I don't have that much time. How much time do I still have?
So your 10 minutes is technically good. You take off.
Okay. Yeah. So now I'm still going to talk about like how this works. The key tool is like this tropical geometry and these tropicalized Feynman integrals. But I didn't expect it to take too long. So the key tool or the key intuition again is this complicated geometry of these algebraic integrals. So the problem is that this complicated geometry obstructs the integration, and the very naive sounding solution, which actually works, is to just simplify the geometry by brute force. And this is exactly the theme behind tropical geometry. So the philosophy of tropical geometry is to deform the geometry by sacrificing smoothness for simplicity. And this is a very important theme in algebraic geometry by now. A cartoonish example is the following. So here we have the equation for the circle, which is a certain geometry. And here you have like a very perverse way of treating it, namely to just write down this prop here on this polynomial. And this means that you want to replace the plus with the max. So this is not the traditional way to tropicalize, but I like to call it this way. So the plus is replaced with the max, so we only take the max of the two polynomials x squared and y squared. And if we treat our circle with this procedure, we get a square, which can be easily seen. And here the picture is already also symptomatic for the whole story. So here in the circle, you can argue that the area that is surrounded by the circle is quite complicated. It's a transcendental number, it's pi. So our computer, for instance, doesn't like it because it has infinitely many digits. You can also argue that it's very complicated already. But here on this tropical side, we just have a 4. So in general, we rationalize everything using this tropicalization. So this way of tropicalizing is really makes everything rational, and this also reflects itself on the level of these Feynman integrals, which also become rational numbers after this tropicalization treatment. So briefly, this tropical approximation is now coming from some polynomial, which is written down here in this multi-index fashion, and we just add like a superscript trop. And what it does is it replaces the sum with a maximum. And this is the tropical approximation of the polynomial. It's not the tropicalization because to go to the tropicalization, you still have to go to logarithmic coordinates. But this is not really relevant for what I'm going to talk about here. What is relevant is that this tropical approximation provides like a very cool way to bound our original polynomial P. So we can bound the magnitude of P from below and from above by two constants times this P-trop. So this p-trop, in a way, it sandwiches the original polynomial p in a very nice way. P has to fulfill some fine print. It has to be completely non-vanishing on this domain that we are talking about. But yeah, I'm not going to talk about this. The proof. Okay. So we can apply this treatment to our graph polynomials, the Zermatti polynomials for the Feynman integral. So for the first case, for the first Zermatti polynomial, we just replace the sum of the spanning trees by the maximum of the spanning trees. And for the second Zermatti polynomial, we do just the same. And in each case, we just forget about the coefficients. So here, there are some kinematics there, but we forget about the kinematics in this tropicalized framework. We now do the same for the whole Feynman integral by just replacing all the U and F polynomial with their tropicalized siblings. So we go from the Feynman integral to the tropical Feynman integral. And now we can think about this now as a whole tropicalized QFT. And we can actually also interpret this U-trop as appearing in sort of a very interesting limit of our quantum field theory, namely going to zero dimensions, so setting D to zero, and at the same time also setting the propagator powers to zero. So this is also something that can be sort of realized on the level of the Lagrangian. But on the level of these integrals, it just has the following effect here. Due to this approximation property, we now have the integrand being bounded from below and above. And in the for the integrals themselves, that also means, of course, that we have a lower bound and an upper bound for our Feynman integral, which we can get from this tropicalized version. And that's very interesting because this tropicalized integral is much easier to compute than the original Feynman integral. So in cases where we are interested in bounds of amplitudes in quantum field theory, in non-trivial quantum field theory. So in some cases, like in QCD, one might not really hope to actually calculate like some observable explicitly to some very high order, which one is interested in, such that in problems like confinement, for instance. But we can still like get some bounds, like using these tropicalization techniques out that might tell us something about like the behavior like in the non-perturbative or the very large order regime there.
So how do these constants grow in every go compiler?
One can estimate them how much they grow. So they only grow, for instance, exponentially, but yeah, they grow still pretty badly. Important with this is that the evaluation of these tropicalized Feynman integrals is very easy. And at low order, one can just do this for all loops. And the result is always like some rational number or rational function. So in DIMREC, dimensional regularization, you get some rational functions in terms of the dimension. So you can extend this to all orders in epsilon. Then there's a rational function. And this has been also done by Eric Panzer for a certain type of the Feynman integrals, which are, which only involves this U polynomials, but still very interesting. And so up to this order, all these kind of tropicalized integrals can be computed easily. So this is also, Eric also calls this the Hap bound of the Feynman integrals. The idea then is if this tropical integral is known, so this very easy approximation, then this numerical integration is just an extra step that can also be performed. And I'm still briefly going to talk about this numerical integration and this tropical sampling. So again, it's kind of easier to generalize first of all and then specialize again. So we talk again about the P over Q integrants, and the strategy for this numerical integration is now to just treat the exact integral as a perturbation around the tropical one. So how do we do this? We start with our P over Q, nice little algebraic integral, and we just insert a 1. So we insert this 1, which involves this P-trop, and it just cancels itself out again. So by this approximation property, the numerator, the denominator here, the denominator here, they are bounded like from below and above by constants that are finite. So this whole quotient here is going to be bounded too, because both of these things they only wiggle around in some specified window. The only thing that can blow up is this tropicalized part of the integral, this p trop over q trop. And so here we just recover our tropicalized integrand in our integral again. Here we have something that is bounded, and here we have the tropicalized integral. And the idea is now to just define like a new measure, I call it mu tilde trop, that completely takes care of this tropicalized part of the integral. And we want to swallow everything into this kind of measure. And if we do this, we just have something left over that is bounded. So by definition, I mean, if it's bounded, it's also perfectly square integrable. So we can definitely put it into our Monte Carlo integrator. Just because it's bounded, we can take arbitrary high moments. They are always going to be finite. So this way, this tropicalization solves the blow-up problem very nicely. And the key tool then that is still needed is that this mu trop tilde measure is actually the canonical measure. I mean, if you know these words, you know them, but if not, they're not. So it's the canonical measure on the common refinement of the normal fans of the Newton polytopes of P and Q. That's a mouthful, sorry for that. So in other words, this mu trop tilde is a certain measure on a polytope that is associated to these P and Q polynomials. So you have to compute some polytope. The mu trop is a uniform measure on this polytope. And if you then write this down as an integral over this polytope, then we have this nice uniform, flat, bounded structure of our integrand. So sampling from this measure, this mu tilde trop, allows now numerical integration via Monte Carlo. And the important thing is that we have now an efficient algorithm to do this kind of sampling. And this is quite easy to find such an algorithm. So you just have to sort of think about how to sample like points from a polytope. And you do this by triangulating the polytope. And then each simplex, I mean, it's like a refinement of the polytope. And then you pick sort of your random simplex. And then it's easy to pick like a random point inside the simplex. And this approach gives you like points from this measure, from this mu trop measure. And you can just use this to perform your Monte Carlo. So the way this goes is now that we write this P over Q now in terms of this mu trop measure, something that is bounded. You just evaluate this bounded thing like over this polytope. And we just need this algorithm to produce these samples. And this already gives us this nice behavior, which is v squared plus v, because we can just understand this polytope once and for all. That takes v squared many steps. And then we can just evaluate as often as we like. So that's the first thing. Okay, yeah, I'm quickly going to say now what you can still do in the Feynman integral case. So in the Feynman integrals, we can use some extra structure. So all the what I was talking about here before now was for the generic case, where we sort of start with like arbitrary polynomials P and Q, and we just ask about the structure of these polynomials or these Newton polytopes associated to them. In the Feynman integral case, there's like one structure that is particularly attractive to use, and this is called generalized permutahedra. So these Newton polytopes that are relevant for this numerical integration in the Feynman integral case are generalized permutahedra, and for them we can write very effective algorithms to perform the sampling and to analyze this these kind of polytopes. So generalized permutahedra, they have been studied, they have been introduced by Posnikov. And Schultgar in 2018 proved that using results of Brown, that in the Feynman integral case, these Newton polytopes, they are generalized from the future. This works if f of g has only Euclidean momenta. So here are the pictures of generalized permittivity. So what we actually want to do is to work on this dual construction, so on this normal fan. So the sampling, it involves like picking like random cones on this fan. So we pick like a cone here that always depends on some permutation. So that's why it's called generalized permittivity. And we can then perform, get these samples from this. So I'm not going to talk about this. So as a consequence of this generalized permittivity structure, there's there are very fast algorithms now to produce these samples in this specific case. And this algorithm, it makes heavy use from a very cool paper by Agia and Adia from 2017, who really brought this theory of these generalized permittivity to the next level. So so this is not only the work of there on this generalized permittivity, but one really needs this association also with complexity and optimization theory to get this algorithm. So this is quite kind of magic that this actually works so nicely on the level of these generalized permittivity. Just to give you an idea, so important tools are that these generalized permittivity may come with a facet presentation. So the generalized permittivity is completely described by one Boolean function z. So Boolean function means that there's like one value for each subset of some set. I call it here I of some set of integers, but you can also think about this function like one value for each subgraph of our Feynman graph. So in this case, the z assigns some number to each subgraph of our original graph. The tropical sampling approach, or this tropical sampling then for the generalized permittivity case, it employs a certain recursion on such subgraph functions to actually produce this these cones. So the tool there is really that we can write down like a recursion that generates sort of partial volumes of this dual normal fan, which are here indexed by this jr. So we can compute these partial volumes recursively based on this R. R is the former Z. So this is this function that characterizes the generalized permittivity. And if you know this function, we can compute this other function or a table of this other function. So it's always a table. And if you know these partial volumes, then it's very easy to generate samples from these cones or from points in this dual generalized permittivity. So this is like what you get out of this is a very simple algorithm actually. So this is like the algorithm that to generate a sample from this measure for these generalized permittivity cases. And you just have to sort of start with some set and you pick sort of a random, or you start with the full graph, so in the graph picture, and you pick a random edge, and this random distribution with which you pick the edge is given by these kind of tables or these subgraph functions. So you have to read off like the probabilities to pick off an edge from a certain table. And then you remove this edge from the set and you generate like one of your homogeneous coordinates inside your parameterization of the Schwinger parameters. And this algorithm, it gives you like a point that is exactly right, that is distributed in exactly the right way for this numerical integration of the Feynman integral to work. And the important thing is also that it's very easy to implement. So you just have to implement a couple of lines of code with which you can then integrate Euclidean Feynman integrals without doing anything fancy. That's very nice. So the Euclidean problem, so you can do something with the in this caveat that there's like only Minkowski, that there's only Euclidean kinematics working. So for this, you have to use some analytic confirmation. And this is this work in progress with Henrik and Felix. Yeah, an open question there is kind of what tropical geometries appear like in this more general case, because in very specific singular cases, this generalized permutahedron property breaks down for the second semantic polynomial, for the F polynomial. So an open question is really like what kind of geometries appear there in the general case in this Minkowski space issues for these family triplets. Yeah, so briefly, I want to mention also like a more general approach. So so if you think again about these observables in the initial case as sums over graphs, then we can take this splitting into this tropicalization seriously and then try to sort of include also the graphs into our sampling mechanism. So we want to like pick like a random graph and a random part of our polytopes. We want to glue our polytopes somehow together and then sort of integrate this AN number, which is the sum of all graphs, all together. And yeah, this leads to sort of modular spaces,
these kinds of ideas.
And it's inclusive in the spirit of this positive geometry philosophy by Okay, so here's a picture of these kind of modular spaces, which I really like, which are modular spaces of graphs. Yeah, so the main conclusion is that these Feynman integrals are surprisingly easy to integrate. So thanks and sorry for going over time.
So, any further questions? I know we have some during the discussion, but we'll. Yes. So, in the non-Euclidean case, the measure is still real. It's still the kind of measure, like.
This is the
non-Euclidean with that.
The non-abelian or non-Euclidean?
Non-Euclidean,
what is the measure?
The measure is defined with the.
Yeah, you can still just define it. Yeah.
It's real. The measure is real. We can define it in the same way.
Yeah, the tropicalization is always real. Yeah.
But in this region, you expect that the amplitude part is imaginary part, right?
Yeah, but the imaginary part is then sort of only in the in the other part, in the sort of perturbed part.
Okay. And I don't know about it. How does the method compare with other methods of computing, like finding something?
Yeah, I mean, it's like an order of magnitude, order of magnitude faster. So with traditional methods, you cannot go beyond three loops essentially. But with this, you can get much further.
We'll use certain methods, like for actual experiment. I thought there were other methods we could find, you write that some equation. Not the
differential equation.
Yeah.
So, but that also is like very low loop order usually. But yeah, that's an analytic method actually. So usually people try to solve like everything analytically. Okay. Marlene?
Is it possible to do tropical Monte Carlo on the phase space intervals rather than the actual?
I mean.
Variables need.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe it would be great to do something like this. So, yeah, I don't know if I. No, I didn't write this here as an idea. But yeah, this would be great to do something like this on phase space.
Because you showed some preliminary ideas for the scattering amplitude, you said, and there you also have to deal with phase space.
No, you can just compute the whole amplitude, just the sum of all the Feynman integrals. Without thinking about the phase space, so just the amplitude without any phase space. I mean, eventually to get some cross section or something like this, you need to do the phase space.
You want to combine maybe booster?
Yes. I mean, eventually you want to combine everything, but so then it becomes very complicated, of course.
Very nice.